Hello, everyone. I'm Kevin Weiner, and thanks for tuning in to another broadcast of Beyond Everything Radio. And guess what? I have a question for you. Is it ever okay for a leader to call a woman a dog? You know, last week, President Trump called a former staff member a dog, among other insults. And as usual, both sides of the aisle chimed in, as they usually do, aligning with their own traditions and preferences and tribal groupthink. Well, in today's broadcast, we explore a very confusing story where Jesus calls a foreign woman a dog. What first appears as apathy and insult opens up a story that will free us from our juvenile bigotry and unredeemed pain. Join me now as we see past the insult into its intended audience, namely, those that would ignore the commandment to love for the sake of their tradition and tribe. Hello, everybody. I'm so glad to have you back for another broadcast. Welcome aboard. Welcome to Sunday. My name's Kevin Weiner. I'm your host. I like to serve the world as an online pastor, author, and uncoach, among many other things. So glad to have you with me, and welcome again to this broadcast. You know, folks, if you like this recording, if you like this program that comes on every Sunday, I do want to invite you to go to my website, www.kevinweiner.com, and sign up for Weiner's Windshield. Why? Well, because as of September the 9th, I will be moving off of the radio waves and exclusively into the online format. So if you want to access this, it will be a podcast, and you can access it through my weekly newsletter. So go to kevinweiner.com, sign up for Weiner's Windshield. Do that today to make sure you never miss an upcoming episode. I'll be so glad if you do. And folks, guess what? We are continuing our exploration of Bible stories that are confusing, or maybe we've heard taught a very particular way throughout most of our life. And then I'm coming along and trying to offer a new lens, which is something I can do as an online pastor, which allows us to actually hear the teachings of Scripture for the very first time in a very new way, a nuanced way. And today, we're going to talk about calling women dogs. That's right. The title of today's episode is called Calling Women Dogs. Now, recently, President Trump called a former staff member a dog. Many of you who saw the TV show The Apprentice remember Omarosa from one of those early episodes, and she ended up being a staff member, and I guess things went south. And as is typical for this presidency, quite disappointingly, name-calling has always erupted through the Twitter sphere. And, you know, let's look at name-calling. It's not just President Trump. We see that off on the other side of the aisle just as much. And really, name-calling is just the immature reflex of someone who Kierkegaard would say is in despair over not becoming a true self. So, you know, lashing out is really just tribal language. Lashing out, calling names, victimizing, picking teams is really just our pseudonym, our fake ID that we've been talking about. It's our adolescent false self. It's immaturity. And we have been studying the true and the false self recently, and so I thought I would tie all of these things together with a story about another man who called a woman a dog. That other man was named Jesus. And so, does it surprise you to learn that Jesus called a foreign woman a dog? I mean, the basis for Jesus doing so is nothing like what we saw with our president. I mean, it was not a childish jab stemming from Jesus' untransformed pain. No, no, no. Instead, what we're seeing here is a portal through which a deeper conversation actually transpired. And the result was a foreign woman who teaches us how to be free from the despair of not being a self and the power of being liberated from racial and religious bigotry by basically taking God at his word. And what am I talking about? So if you're not familiar with the Bible story, you can find it in Mark, I believe it's chapter 7. And you can also find it in Matthew chapter 15, which is the text that I usually pull this from. And it's just because there's a little more detail in it. But Matthew chapter 15 tells this story of a Canaanite woman, a Syrophoenician woman, who was basically crying out to Jesus to heal her daughter. And her daughter was oppressed by a demon. And Jesus ignores her. Yet she's persistent. She's persistent to the point that his disciples come to Jesus and ask him to do something for her, or at least send her away. And so when Jesus does respond to her, he says, "You know, I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel," like it says in verse 25. And the woman literally prostrates herself. She throws herself down. She kneels down before Jesus and she begs for his help. To which he replies, "You know, it's not right to take the children's bread and throw it to dogs." And her reply to this is, "Yes, Lord, but even dogs eat crumbs that fall from the master's table," verse 27. And when Jesus sees this faith of hers, he heals the daughter and sends her on her way. Now, this story is really confusing, and I've read many, many commentaries on it to try and get a framework, and I can tell you that the framework that I see is slightly nuanced. And like I say, there's more detail in the Matthew retelling of the story than there is in Mark, but there's something here that I think will help all of us. It will help the religious false self, if anybody else. You see, in the book of Matthew, in the story that's there, she calls Jesus the Son of David. Now, that title would have meant a lot to a Jew, right? But as a Greek, as somebody who's an outsider, you know, that title wouldn't have meant so much, right? She was a foreigner. This woman was not only culturally diverse from Judaism and from the tribe, right? She would have been religiously diverse. I mean, she was Greek. She was a Gentile, according to the Jews. So following her request to heal her daughter, Jesus just ignores her. And then when he does address her, he seems to just insult her. So what's this all about? I mean, the reason this passage is so confusing to so many people is because it just seems to contradict the Jesus revealed in the rest of Scripture. Or does it? You know, yeah, maybe he's talking about you got to struggle, you got to beg, your faith has to go through a time where God doesn't respond to you. And I get that. You know, those kinds of applications from this Scripture are certainly in there. And while I certainly don't claim to have this particular text all figured out, I am going to offer what I think is a reasonable perspective, and it's something that I didn't see when I was looking through some other commentaries on this, okay? And like all of the scriptures, when I share these Bible stories, context is everything. Context is everything. I mean, if you separate this story out from the surrounding stories, I'm pretty sure we're going to get off track. But both Matthew and Mark tell the previous stories in a similar way. So they both have the same kind of setups for this story. And I think that's really important because you see that the same couple of stories precede this story. It tells you that those stories belong together. They're pointing out something bigger. So and in both cases, Jesus is really addressing the religious leaders who have criticized him and his disciples about their obedience to the religious and the moral law. And basically, Jesus and his disciples are not following, you know, protocol. And the religious people are coming along and they're asking him, "Hey, man, why are you disobeying the law? Why are you and your disciples so disobedient?" You know, religious people are always policing everybody. I mean, these are people who have very little freedom themselves, and they certainly don't want anybody else to have any. And so the context here is that Jesus is trying to help the disciples understand. You see that in verse 16 when he says, "Are you still without understanding?" Right? The key The question that comes to this, you know, is, you know, Jesus asks the question back. He responds to their question about why aren't you guys are obeying the law? Why aren't you guys playing by the rules? He answers their question with a question, and this question is the heart of this whole passage. In verse 3 of chapter 15, Jesus asks them, well, why do you break the commandment of God for the sake of your tradition, right? Why are you being so tribal? Why do you just follow the tribe so much that you forget the commandment of God, which is to love others? You see, once again, Jesus is reframing reality away from religious compliance. And he's doing it from, you know, religious compliance is always outside in, right? It's based on externals. It's all about, you know, put on a good show and we'll just assume everything is good on the inside. But Jesus is reshaping that. He's trying to say, look, religious compliance from the outside in is a waste of your time. Focus more on a faith that transforms everything from the inside out. And verses 10 through 20 of this chapter really point that out, that the cause of everything that's defiled is not coming from the outside going in. You know, the thing that corrupts you is not your TV, it's not your internet, it's not the messages of the media, it's not the world outside, folks. All those things do not corrupt you. It's not what's outside coming in that's the problem. The real problem is what's on the inside and how it comes out. You see, he exposes that compliance doesn't really transform that ugly, prejudicial part of us, does it? And this is the reason I think Jesus is making an example of this religious mindset, this tribal mindset. And so you can see that if this was really a big conversation, this is really something that's going on, then all of a sudden they move to this more remote area. And some religious leaders may have followed along, but certainly the disciples were there. And this is a message to the disciples about religion. This is a message about what happens when you get into this tribal groupthink. And it would be no better if they turned their little sect, their little club of 12 disciples and those who are following them into another tribal groupthink. It wouldn't get us anywhere. You see, this is the message. The pious people, the religious mindset, the tribal groupthink, It would ignore non-Jews. In Luke 10:32, you see the story of the Good Samaritan, and they literally just walk on the opposite side of the street. Why? Because they couldn't associate or be defiled by a Samaritan. And so this was in the mindset of this tribe, you know, don't associate with those people. So Jesus actually is modeling for them in his exchange with this woman, you know, that this is what it means, right? This is what this looks like. If you follow protocol, you're going to dehumanize others. And, you know, what does it look like to a foreign woman who is desperate to help her daughter, right? If you run the rules, you're not going to engage with this woman. And so what is more heartless than to ignore the need of a child? And Jesus is simply modeling this to them. Okay, you want to roll tape? You want to roll your religion? You want to roll the program? Then here's what this looks like. You see, religion is no protection from racism. In fact, it often promotes it. Yes, religion promotes racism. It promotes separatism. It promotes tribal thinking. It promotes otherness disease. You know that to be true, just like I do. You see, the Jews viewed themselves as the chosen people. They believed God liked them the best. You know, God picked them out of everybody else. And so what Jesus is doing is reflecting back to them just how arrogant this disposition is to the rest of the world. And man, don't we just see that everywhere? I mean, don't we see how so often in modern Christianity we have this mindset of arrogance that, oh, Only Christians know God. Everybody else is deceived. Everybody else knows something false. And we're the only ones that really count. This is the only team that Jesus loves. This is the only ones that are going to be saved. This is Jesus reflecting back to his people the same message. This is an arrogant disposition. And he does this by telling the woman, hey, I was sent only to Israel. And, you know, it's not right that I take the bread, the children's bread, and give it to dogs. verse 24 and verse 26. So he's calling her a dog. He, you know, Samaritans were seen as half-breeds, and so the Jews called them dogs. And he knows that she's, you know, not a true Jew, and so he's just running the tape. He's running the program, and he's showing what this really looks like. And this woman doesn't blink. This is amazing. She really knows who she is. You see, she says, "Yes, Lord, but even dogs get the crumbs." So she plays along. She's like, "Sure, okay, that's fine. Call me a dog." But guess what? Even a dog gets the crumbs, verse 27. You see, and that's when Jesus has had enough. You see, the charade of showing and modeling to everybody what solidarity to religious rules looks like has now gone out the window, because her humanity has come through. And Jesus is saying, look, you cannot put process over people. You know, he's proven that the byproduct of obedience is now the diminishment and the dehumanization of another. And if he continued with that, that's exactly what's happening. What a model. What a way to show his disciples that, man, religion is not the path to God. He's showing them that liberation from the inside out is how we know God has already come to us. You see, her faith is rewarded and her child is healed, and she basically just takes him at his word and goes on her way. That's amazing. We should all learn from this woman, this foreign woman. And by re-engaging with her at this point, at the point of need, instead of just deferring her, he's undoing religion at its heart, verse 19. And he's reprioritizing people over process, right? Remember, the Sabbath was made for man, or man and women. We weren't made for the Sabbath. You see, religion wasn't made, it was made for us, right? We were not made for our religion. And he's proven the point. Religion becomes a place of untransformed pain. If you just roll tape, then you just take your pain and you pass it on to others. And he turns religion inside out, which is the whole point of this passage, that everything happens from the inside out, not the outside in, by giving what is only for Israel to someone who is culturally and religiously diverse. You see, by healing the Canaanite's daughter, he not only shows that he has the power to heal, but that this power is not sequestered within the prejudicial tribe or people group. It's for everybody. What Jesus is doing is actually blowing up and modeling and putting on display the jewel that is found in Jeremiah 31, 34. He's actually teaching them what their own prophets taught, when they said, everyone shall know me, I'm talking about God, from the least to the greatest. Everyone shall know me. Now that is amazing. And so I guess it all comes back a little bit on us, right? This passage, this story, as difficult as it is to understand, it does kind of start bubbling to the surface our own reality. It really does challenge us on our own tribal groupthink, right? Are we the religious police? Do we look around at all the people breaking the rules and ask, why are you breaking the rules? And when we really look at our rules, are they rules that are driven from the inside out, or are they just really about compliance to make us look good in front of others? Is it really just a tribal behavior modification system? Or is it truly something that's transformation from the inside out? You know, this is the question that comes to all of us. What about you? What about me? I mean, who is the Canaanite in your life? You know, for a lot of modern Christian people that I talk to, it's the Muslim. It's the gay person. It's a Democrat, right? These are the people that we can easily diminish, right? What about it? Is it the atheist? If you're on the other side of the team and you don't subscribe to religion, do you look at TV preachers? the fundamentalist, the pious religious person? Is that your Canaanite? Is it easy for you to diminish people of faith? Right? What people group is not your people? You see, the whole point of the question, the whole point of this passage, this foreign woman helps us to see, is where is your otherness disease residing? I mean, who is it easy for you to call a dog? Right? Which team or which tribe can you easily diminish as less deserving? And don't think for a minute you're exempt here. I'm not either. I've seen all the Facebook posts. Most of us pick a team and we just run with that. Right? If you're a Fox News follower, then you're probably a big Trump fan. If you're a CNN follower, you're probably a Trump hater. And you probably align yourself along one of the two party lines and you just pick your team and go roll tape just like everybody else. And this is the point. This is what Jesus is trying to get at. Whether you're doing it from a religious framework and diminishing other religions, or whether you're doing it from a political framework and diminishing anybody who doesn't see the world as you do, it's the same problem. It's otherness disease. So who is it that you can easily call a dog, right? Is it easy for you to throw stones at President Trump for calling Omarosa a dog, but then you have no problem throwing stones at the Republicans or somebody else? You see, this is not something we get out from very easily. This is why I believe Jesus needed to treat this woman this way initially, to demonstrate just how pervasive, just how dehumanizing, just how hypocritical we are when we say we love God, but then we diminish another. This is sobering teaching, folks, right? Who do you see is less deserving? I mean, do we break the commandment of God to love others for the sake of our tradition, for the sake of our tribe? I've seen people out there bashing, you know, gays and saying, well, that's because God hates gays, right? Or God is against this. And they take this very strong stand. Do you forsake the commandment of God to love others for the sake of your tradition? This is Jesus' question. It happens on both sides of the fence, folks. But who's your tribe? You see, a soul, a true self like this woman is not defined by the labels. She's not offended by the labels because she knows that's not who I am. And she's a free and true self. And she has tremendous faith. And this is why her life is rewarded. This is why Jesus says, I'm ending the charade now. And this is what it's all about. She's what it's all about. Folks, this hits us all. Otherness disease is the ugliest part of our humanity. But, you know, it can be overcome. And, you know, we can do it by just taking one sentence deep within our heart. You know what that is? The next time that we think of those people, the next time in your mind you're thinking of those people, whether it's the terrible driver that's in front of you, whether it's the political party you disagree with, whether it's the religion that you don't understand and fear, whether it's that group of people who don't live in your zip code, it's the group of people that don't share your race or ethnicity, right? Whenever you have those people creeping up into your mind, into your heart, I want you to say this sentence. Here it is. While I am not you, I am not other than you either. Right? Don't pick a team, folks. Don't land on one side of a binary framework. See, the gospel shows us that everything is a both and so much more. When you land on a binary framework, you diminish your humanity and you diminish that of others. It's not us against them. It's all us, and we're all different, and we're all the same at the same time. So while I am not you, and you are not me, I am not other than you either, and you are not other than me either. And see, when we get there, at the heart level, from the inside out, which is what Jesus' message is all about. When you finally get there, right before your very eyes, you will see a new world emerging from the inside out. And now, may we all learn something from this faithful foreign woman. Hi, it's Kevin Winder. And did you know coaching is not just for athletic performance anymore? The world is learning how we learn from one another, and life coaching is at the center of this transformation. We used to just call it pastoral care, but now coaching is multidimensional. Did you realize that 90% of coaching operates on the principle that if you are able to do more, accomplish more, or have more, then you will get to be more? Well, that's why I'm the uncoach. Contrary to the world, our doing doesn't create our being. Instead, it's our being that creates our doing. Uncoaching is then counterintuitive. You can always have anything you think you want by ascending or climbing or striving. But you can only have what you really want by first descending, emptying, and waking up to who you really are. So if your life is stuck, plateaued, or just really confusing, then contact me today. I never charge for coaching, but I have a limited amount of space. So if you want to go deeper for the sake of rising up, then contact me, the uncoach, at kevinwinder.com.